You're listening to the HNC Let's Talk podcast, hosted by Dexter Brooks. Thanks for tuning in to HNC Let's Talk podcast. We partner with subject matter experts to provide candid conversations on health and lifestyle. Here at HNC Let's Talk podcast, mental, physical, spiritual, financial, and health are all connected. This episode of HNC Let's Talk podcast is sponsored by HealthNet Co. Together, we make insurance simple.
Good afternoon. I'm Dexter Brooks, and I'm your host with HNC Let's Talk podcast. I want to welcome everybody to the podcast today, and we have our co-host today, Demetrius Raiden Johnson. How are you doing, Demetrius?
I'm doing really good today. How you doing, Dexter?
I'm doing well. Overall, I'm doing well.
Doing mostly well?
Mostly well. Overall, I'm doing mostly well. It's hot.
Well, good. Glad to hear it.
You know, it's
yeah, I saw in the news you guys got up there to about 96 degrees out in Denver.
Yeah, man. Yesterday was 96 and I felt it. I was like, whoa, this is... Yeah, and like I said, you know, I'm from Georgia, so I'm used to the heat, but still, it's hot.
It's pretty hot here, too, in Tennessee. It's, you know, but we get the humidity, too, so it's a little bit of a different kind of heat down here, and I'm getting used to that, being in Denver for 30 years, and, you know, this humidity, I'm just getting used to it.
30 years, man, that's amazing.
Yeah. I love Denver. I can't wait to get back. You know, like I said before, you know, I'll be back and forth between Tennessee and Denver, but I haven't made the trip back to Denver yet. And hopefully here in the next couple of weeks, I'll be back there. So I'm definitely looking forward to that.
Well, make sure you touch base with me when you pop back up in town.
Yeah, definitely will.
You know, absolutely. Now, on our last podcast, we was talking, and so we decided to take this podcast into a different direction, and we decided to talk about was insurance.
Yeah. We, you know, want to definitely touch on that. You know, we're talking about finances and financial wellness. You know, yeah, there's the investment aspect of things, which is more of the offense of your financial plan, and then you know, there's the insurance side of things, which tends to act as more of the defensive side. And so, I thought it was important that we talk about the defense.
Defensive side. So you got to touch base on that one. So I've never heard anybody call it the defensive side.
Yeah, it's, you know, the life insurance is the defense. It protects against, you know, various things that might happen to you, whether that's, you know, life insurance protecting against, you know, premature death, or whether it's disability insurance protecting you financially against, you know, in case you get hurt and you're not able to work. You know, it's a defensive tactic, a strategy that is part of an overall plan. So, you know, with the investments, you know, you're trying to make money and you're trying to, you know, retire and do other things offensively. But life insurance, or with insurance in general, you know, you want to protect things. And so, you know, whenever I think about life insurance, I think about, you know, protecting your financial plan against, you know, premature death. And that's kind of what it does. And so, that's how I kind of like to think of it, because, you know, I don't play football or basketball, but, you know, in any given sport, you know, it takes both. You know, they say defense wins games. In football, and you know, I think that can be incorporated with your financial plan too, and me acting as a financial coach, I like to kind of put it that way sometimes.
So, why is it called premature death? What do you mean?
Well, you know, with life insurance, you know, when you get life insurance, they have all these actuaries, and they're, you know, calculating what your life expectancy is, and they're looking at mortality tables. And, you know, should you die prematurely, you know, there's a cash death benefit that is paid out to beneficiaries. Mm-hmm. And now, if you live to your life expectancy, you know, whether it's 100 or, you know, different insurance products might have like a life expectancy of like 121 years, which is not, you know, reasonable for most people, but for actuarial purposes and calculation purposes, and to make sure that the life insurance company is profitable and things, you know, they have these, all these numbers. And so they say, well, you know, based on your age, your health, your family history, you know, all these other things, you know, this is what your premium payment is going to be every month. And should you die prematurely, you know, if then, you know, we're going to pay out this amount of money. So if you're, say, for instance, if you're 40, like myself, I'll be 42 years old this year. And, you know, I'm expected to live, you know, all things being equal, which of course they're not, but all things being all things being equal, you know, I should live to a certain age, you know, and say that age is 85 or say it's 90. I'm a pretty healthy person. And I'll tell you, I've been rated as, you know, they give you these different ratings. They'll say, well, you're of, you know, average rating, or you're superior rating, or highly preferred rating. And, the higher the rating that you have, generally, you know, the better for you. So, you know, but if you die prematurely, then, you know, there's a benefit paid out. So if I were to walk out, if I buy life insurance today, and if something unforeseen were to happen with, say, within the next couple of days, even, you know, I've made my premium payment. Mm-hmm. I've only made one premium payment, but, you know, a substantial amount of money could be paid out to my beneficiaries because, you know, one of those random things happened. I walked out on the street and get hit by a bus. It was something that could not be accounted for. And so, because of, you know, I didn't live to the ripe old age of 80 or 85, the life insurance calculations didn't account for something, you know, there has to be a benefit paid out. Even though I only may have paid only one premium payment, the life insurance company has to pay out. So in that way, financially, it's covering, you know, my premature demise. Of course, they're not protecting me against against death. You know, I'm still dead. There's no way that the insurance company can do that. But, you know, financially, from a financial standpoint, I can say, well, you know, you were expected to, you know, live this long and earn this amount of money, and we're going to protect your family against your premature death, at least from, you know, from a money standpoint.
Absolutely. Now, I know on the life insurance side, there's so many different type of, I don't know if it's a plans, like you have the variable universal life insurance. You have the life insurance with long-term care benefits. You have the index universal life insurance. You have the term life insurance. You have the whole life insurance. And then you have the universal life insurance.
There's so many different types of life insurance. it's gotten to be a little crazy. And, you know, as the market has changed, and as people's needs, I suppose, have changed, there have been different types of products that have come about. You know, the two primary, I guess, you know, we can talk about maybe the top two or three.
Would the top three be the like term, whole life, and universal?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Is term, whole life, and universal. Those are the top three. And, you know, a common question that I get from clients is, what's the difference? What should I get?
And that's the road I was going down.
Yeah. What should I get? And my answer is always, it depends. You know, that's always my answer. You know, that's always the answer. And so, you know, with whole life is a permanent life insurance policy. It's designed in such a way to cover you for your entire life. Okay. Whereas term life insurance, just as the name would insinuate, it's for a specified period of time. Okay. Those are the two primary types, is term life and whole life.
Okay.
And you kind of want to think about term life as renting life insurance. Okay. Because term life will cover you for, I'll use myself as an example again. So I'm 42 this year in August. And I could buy maybe a 15-year or 20-year term or 30-year term. And that term policy will cover me for that term. I will pay a relatively modest amount of premium payment every month, or there's different modes of payments. You can pay your premium every month. You can pay it every quarter, you know, semi-annually or annually. Annually generally is going to be the cheapest way to pay for your premium. You do get a slight, I guess you call it a discount when you pay annual premium payments. But with term life insurance, you make your premium payments throughout the term. And should you pass away during that period of time, then the life insurance company will pay you out, however much that face value is, however much that death benefit is. So if I buy a 20-year term and I'm 42 and I get to 55 and I pass away, well, then the life insurance company will pay out the face amount of that term. And again, with term, you're paying a relatively modest premium for a pretty high death benefit with term relative to whole life. Okay. Now, the downside is that should I get to 62 or 63, then that policy will expire. So I'm still alive and I've paid premiums for the specified term, and the life insurance company gets to retain those premiums. And I'm now 62 years old and say I'm still healthy. Now I have to go get insurance at my age, age of 62.
Are you able to convert that term into a whole life policy?
You can. So with different types of term policies, there is the, you know, convertibility. So not all life insurance has this, but throughout that period of that term life, you may have the ability to convert all or a portion of it to a permanent policy. Now, you cannot go back. So you can't purchase a whole life policy and then convert a portion of it to term. It only goes one way.
Okay.
Because, you know, I don't want to say one is better than the other, but I mean, you can use some deductive reasoning as to why you might not be able to go from one to the other. I mean, you know, you can't go from a permanent policy into something that is temporary. And some people will argue that, you know, well, whole life is expensive. Whole life is, you know, it's not worth it. I think that there's a place for both. I think there's a place for both term and both and whole life. It's just how you place it. You know, life insurance is all about, you know, how much you're going to pay in premium and how much coverage you're going to get, and, you know, how you incorporate it within the rest of your plan.
Now, quick question for you, but now, isn't in general life insurance is lower priced if you purchase it at an early age?
Oh, absolutely. The younger you are, I hate to say it this way, but the younger you are, the longer you're expected to live. And so you generally also will tend to have fewer health problems. But yeah, you know, the younger you purchase life insurance, the lower the premium. I always recommend that people buy life insurance as early as possible, just because, you know, even with tomorrow not being promised from a standpoint of, you know, people might pass away, but so far as your health is concerned, tomorrow is not promised. You could come down with an illness and then suddenly become uninsurable.
Mm-hmm.
So purchasing life insurance at an early age can be quite advantageous. And like I said, you know, we kind of talked about term there and the basics of how that works. And like you mentioned, there is some convertibility. You are able to, with certain policies, convert a term policy into a permanent policy, a whole life policy, or maybe even a universal life policy. But, you know, so far as the features of a whole life policy, you know, with that type of policy, again, it's designed to cover you for the entirety of your life. Now, depending on how you set the policy up, you may pay premiums for your whole life, but most people would prefer to pay that policy off ahead of time so that they're not paying for it their whole life. Mm-hmm. Most of my clients, you know, have set their policies up. The ones that have whole life have set it up in such a way that maybe it's paid up at 65 or, you know, maybe even sooner than that. The soonest that you can pay off a life insurance policy, a whole life insurance policy, I believe is 7 years. And the reason for that is because whole life has dividends that it's going to pay out. Okay. And so as you're paying premiums every year, the life insurance companies will pay dividends to you within the policy. And you can either take those dividends, you can have them build up as cash value within the whole life policy. You can use those dividends to start paying for premium payments for you. You know, there a lot of companies have, you know, different companies have different levels of flexibility as to what you can do with those premium payments or with those dividends. I'm sorry. But the reason why they limited it to 7 years is because many years ago, you know, with this cash value that's able to build up with the dividends, people started to treat life insurance like an investment. And so, you know, they want to avoid people from doing that. And so, you know, they make it to where you have to at least pay on the policy for 7 years. You may be paying an astronomical amount of premium payment for that 7 years, but after that, you no longer would have to pay premium payments. But I've seen the trend to be to pay off that whole life policy at about 65, because as people decide to retire, you know, they don't want to still have to be paying life insurance premium payments. So I've seen 65 as a pretty common year for that. So when comparing the two, you know, there's benefits to both. You do get the cash value build up within the whole life policy, which can be used for a number of things. You can collateralize those, that cash value. You can take, you can take money out of the policy. I've seen people, you know, go to the bank and collateralize the cash that's within that whole life policy to get a, like a secured loan of sorts or collateralized loan. So there is definitely some flexibility there. Now, one important thing to note is that, and this is a huge conversation within the industry, is, you know, what is more expensive, whole life or term? Now, this is something that can easily be addressed, or, you know, when I talk to clients, this is kind of one of the ways that I explain it to them. The premium payment on whole life insurance is always going to be higher for the same death benefit than it will be when you compare it to term. However, so far as cost goes, well, if you have a whole life policy where you can get to a point to where you no longer have to pay the premium payment and the cash value within the policy is greater than the amount of premiums that you paid for that term, and you compare that to a term policy, well, there's a point at which with the whole life policy that cash value may exceed the amount that you paid into it. So at that point, the term policy is more expensive over a given period of time. So, you know, that's one of those things in the investment world. When I was an investment wholesaler and I was talking to advisors and things and, you know, being coached by my superiors about how to sell investments to advisors so they can then sell them to their clients. One of the things that we were taught is that, you know, cost is only an issue in the absence of value. Okay. And so what that means is that over the long haul, in the example of life insurance, whole life has a greater value than term. It can, when you take into consideration the cash value, that builds up in there. And so I'll give you a good example, just kind of a basic example is that, you know, like with a house, for instance, if you see a house and you say, oh, well, this is an $8 million house, you say, oh, well, that's expensive. You know, the house is expensive. But then you go get that house appraised and it's a $10 million or $20 million home. Well, now the house doesn't seem as expensive. It has value
to it.
It's worth 20, you know, but you're buying it for $8 million. Now that house seems cheap, you know, it's there relative cost. Yeah. And so when it comes to life insurance, the same thing. The premium on term life is very, very cheap. The cost of it, the amount that you pay out of your pocket, is very, very cheap. However, for most people, especially for younger people, there's more value in a permanent policy because most policies will only extend out to 30 years. So if you're 20 years old or 30 years old and you buy a 30-year policy, well, that means that, you know, yeah, you're protecting yourself against dying before you hit 60, but your investment portion of your financial plan is betting on you hitting 65 at least. So, you know, yeah, you're protecting yourself. There's this old, you know, method that's out there that I think is kind of changing a little bit where, you know, people talk about buy term and invest the rest. And I've heard that methodology for quite some time. And I think it worked a lot better in the past. And a lot of people are still kind of selling that idea. But I'm not for taking a cookie cutter approach when it comes to life insurance, just because there's too many variables out there. You really need a customized plan.
So let's turn the table a little bit and let's take a look at the underwriting process for insurance. So, because I know that insurance has to be underwritten and the process normally goes through what is considered as the, I know they look at the MIB, the Medical Bureau Investigation.
Yeah.
So, and I think that some people don't realize that insurance does have to go through underwriting. And you do.
Like, oh, yeah.
Because you were speaking about, you know, the levels of, you know, the risks, you know, the preferred, you know, and like, they,
yeah,
like they're
yeah.
giving you a
Stan,
gift.
Yeah. There's, you know, and that process is really interesting because when I say it's interesting, I don't know. I'm an investment nerd, so it's interesting to me. It's probably not interesting to most other people, but the process by which they do the underwriting, you know, they'll go out to your house depending on how much you decide to cover yourself for, and you have to do a medical exam. And, you know, they'll test your blood and they'll test your blood pressure and they'll see how much you weigh, and then, you know, they'll look at the Medical Information Bureau, the MIB, or the, I'm sorry, yeah, the MIB, not the men in, yeah, not the men in black, but the Medical Information Bureau. And so, and they'll look at your medical records. You know, you sign a waiver and they're able to look at your medical history and see, you know, have you been treated for things related to smoking? Smoking is one of the biggest things. I would say between, you know, obesity and smoking, those are the two primary things that will cause your premium payments to go up. And smoking is one of those ones that is a major one. Now, that being said, there are certain companies that will allow you to go back and be reevaluated. So you go get your physical or your paramedical exam and, you know, you get rated as a smoker. You know, if in a couple of years, you know, you stop smoking, you know, you may be able to go back and get rated as a non-smoker. And so that's something that you might want to look into. Or if you, you know, get more in shape, you lose, you know, some weight. You know, that's something that you might be able to go back and get reevaluated for later. But yeah, they're looking at everything. It's a transference of risk, of financial loss is what it is when you buy life insurance. You're transferring the risk of your premature death financially from yourself to the life insurance agency or the life insurance company, the insurer. And so they want to, they're very good at what they do. So they evaluate risk. And, you know, the higher risk you are, the more that you're going to pay for your insurance.
So when you think about it, that's probably a better reason for people to purchase when they're younger, because they usually have no premature or pre-existing health conditions. and mm-hmm. their body weight is usually at this normal body weight. Their BMI is basically at stable.
Right, exactly. And that's why when I deal with adult clients and they have children, I always recommend that they insure their children, because who knows, you know, with kids, they might, you know, develop something in their teens or their 20s and become uninsurable. And kiddie I call them kiddie policies, but the children policies are super cheap. They are super cheap. And so I always recommend adult clients get insurance for their kids. And I generally recommend that they get some sort of permanent policy, or they get a term policy that is convertible at a later date, mm-hmm. Just to get those kids covered. And, you know, you never know what might happen. I think we talked about this once before in Black culture. It's been my experience and my observation that people don't always want to buy insurance on kids because they feel like it's jinxing them, or it's,
we did touch base on that. And that's weird, isn't it? They feel like it's a voodoo that you're saying my child is going to die at an early age, you know?
Right. And it's not that at all. It's not that at all. And, you know, I remember growing up seeing those commercials for, Gerber life insurance.
I was just thinking about Gerber.
Yeah, that's, you know, Gerber life, baby life insurance. And they would encourage you to buy life insurance, on your kids. And it's been something that's, life insurance has been around for quite some time. Since the founding of this country in various forms, even before then. And so when we talk about life insurance, especially within the Black community, you know, I want to one of my goals is to dispel some of the myths around life insurance and to get people on board with the idea of using life insurance as, yes, a means by which to protect against premature death, but then also as a tool to help create generational wealth within Black families. Black families, you know, oftentimes, we'll lose assets from one generation to another for various reasons, whether that's as a result of gentrification in their house, in their neighborhood, or the loss of land. I know a lot of folks, they may have had grandparents or great grandparents that had land, and that land maybe have, you know, gotten taken away because the taxes weren't paid on it, or, you know, something like that. You know, we want to use life insurance. It can be a tool to help preserve and to create generational wealth within the community. And it's one of the cheapest ways to do it, regardless of what type of life insurance you purchase. I have found it to be the cheapest way to create and maintain generational wealth. And so it's, you know, the cornerstone of any good financial plan. I don't take on clients that don't have life insurance because, from my standpoint, I found it to be irresponsible. As you know, when you know better, you do better. And so I know better. And so when I deal with clients, you know, I tell them, hey, we can talk investments. You know, I can put you on this investment platform or this financial planning platform that I have, but we have to make sure that you have adequate protection as well, because I've had clients that have refused life insurance and want me to deal with them on an investment level, and then within a year or within 5 years have passed away. Okay.
Wow.
And then their spouse and their family comes to me and says, you know, where's our money? Or, you know, he was, you know, we dealt with you and where's the money? So, well, sorry, you know, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, you know, they declined life insurance. They didn't want life insurance. So the amount of money that you are able to receive is limited to the amount of money that they had invested in this account, when it could have been 10 or 100 times that amount.
Wow.
And that's unfortunate. It's extremely unfortunate because, you know, especially when I'm dealing with middle-class people, I say, well, I want to max out my IRA and I want to invest and I want to get in the market and do this and that. Well, nowadays you can only put $6,000 into an IRA. And, you know, even within a 401k, you know, there are limits to the amount that you can contribute there. And, you know, if you just pinch off just a little bit of money to protect against premature death, if something does happen to you, you can rest assured that your family's financial plan will continue as though you were still alive, at least financial, you know, from a monetary standpoint.
And that's really important. I mean, like you said earlier, people, especially the Black community, don't think about it. They don't think about the life insurance perspective until they're older. And I'm going to mention another thing as well. If you're employed and you decide to get covered by your employer's plan, you know, group life insurance, everyone should know that if you lose that employer, if you lose that job, as long as you were not terminated with cause, you're able to convert your group policy.
Yeah, you generally are, you know, and that's a funny thing because most people don't, though. Most, you are able to do that. A lot of times, you know, if you work for an employer and you're laid off or, you know, you leave, you know, you can take, you might be able to take that life insurance with you. Sometimes the employer will pay the premium for you and sometimes you pay it for your, you know, yourself, depending on where you work. But most of the time that is term policy, or it might be like an annual renewable term, which means that, you know, they pay the premium for 1 year and then the next year, you know, it purchases another year's worth of life insurance and then it purchases another year after that. Now, most people, though, when they leave their employer, they don't take that life insurance with them. So it's important to own your own life insurance. And when I say that the employer sometimes is paying that premium, so the employer will sometimes, they might get a tax benefit for paying your life insurance while you work there. But if you leave, they're not going to continue to pay that premium. So you have to pay that premium now. Now, most people don't take that policy with them. I would say the vast majority of people do not take their life insurance with them when they leave their employer. And that's why it's so important for people to own their own life insurance.
You know, that's so shocking because, you know, you would think if I'm employed with an employer who's offering me life insurance, who's paying a percentage of that as well, it eliminated the underwriting process automatically because it's basically coming from an employer and as a group. So there's no underwriting.
Correct.
Why not take it with you when you leave? You basically, you just totally avoided a lot of stress for when you decide to purchase it on your own.
That's correct. There, you know, and that's another thing to consider is that, it, you know, regardless of your health situation, if you are working at an employer and just as you said, you make a great point, you avoid the underwriting process and say you do have some health issues. Okay. So you're covered and you leave your employer and you want to keep that coverage. You probably want to keep that coverage because when you do buy life insurance on your own, you will have to go through that underwriting process. So as a strategy, I've seen people say, well, you know, I've got this ailment or that ailment. So, you know, I want to keep my life insurance that I have through my employer. And, you know, you might leave or get laid off or quit or whatever. Yeah. Try to keep that because, chances are it's going to be cheaper. Especially if you, you know, might not be the healthiest person.
Oh, absolutely. And just because you know automatically, the United States, we're an obese country. So,
we are 55% or more of, you know, of the country is obese. And so, yeah, you know, get that covered any way you can. And whether it's through the employer or whether it's on your own, just make sure that you're covered because it's so important. It's so important. You know, it's a tool that is within a toolbox and you have to put it in your tool belt if you want to build a good financial foundation. Life insurance has to be there.
Absolutely. I agree with that 100%. I mean, I've seen people, I mean, just by with social media and you look at people coming through and something happens and they go, well, we got a GoFundMe for the funeral. You automatically knew the person didn't have life insurance.
They didn't have life insurance. And it's important to deal with someone that you trust and that knows what they're doing, because I've also seen situations where people will buy life insurance and then they'll say, oh, well, the premium went up on me to the point to where I couldn't afford it. Now, this is a problem because unfortunately, you know, not all life insurance agents are created equally, and their knowledge of life insurance varies. And their motives also vary. And so, you know, there are policies that can potentially make it to where you have to pay more every year. And I personally don't sell those kind of policies, but I've seen them sold. Mm. And I've heard people's stories about, you know, I had this policy and then, you know, it was this type of policy. And, you know, after 5 or 10 years, it got to a point where I could no longer afford the premium. And that's because it wasn't a level premium, life insurance policy. And, you know, as an example, there are what they call annual renewable term policies. And every year, it'll go up based on your attained age. So, you know, you're 40 years old and you're basically doing kind of like what the employer does. And you're renewing that term policy every year. And that is your premium is going to be based on your attained age. So obviously every year you get older. And so, so your premium goes up accordingly. And so, you know, it gets to a point to where, you know, it's like, hey, this is no longer in my budget. And then people stop paying it. You know, with term policies, and again, I like term. I think there's a place for term. But I'm also a huge fan of permanent policies. And what sometimes will happen is that with term policies, I've read somewhere that only 1% of all term policies actually pay out. 1%. And the reason is because people either outlive the policy or they stop making the premium payments.
Wow.
1%. So what happens to that money? Well, the insurance company gets to keep it. It's your money. It's their money.
Yep.
So, you know, with whole life, I think, or permanent policies, like even, you know, universal life, people start seeing the value of that policy when they start seeing those dividends and they see cash value building up.
The money coming back to them.
Yeah. Yeah. They see that money coming back. And so, you know, and they see more value in it. And then they keep making those payments. People keep permanent life policies longer than they do term policies. You see less policy lapses on permanent policies. And I think that's because after a while, people start seeing the value of those permanent policies. Whereas with the term policy, you know, they're like, they get to a certain point and they're like, well, I've been paying on this for 20 years and I'm still alive and I'm still healthy. And they say, well, you know, I don't plan on dying in the next 10 years. You know, I still feel like I'm going to be around. And so they start reevaluating and they say, well, maybe I'm not going to pay this anymore. Or they say, well, I need to convert this at this time. So that's another thing that happens is, to be fair to term life, is that oftentimes, you know, if people don't stop paying it or if they don't outlive the policy, then they convert it to a permanent policy, thereby making it to where that term policy doesn't pay out.
You know, you would think now that we're now a gig economy, that more people would basically continue with their insurance policies. Because you can pick up an Uber or Lyft position and pay your policy. You drove, what, one day?
Yeah, you drove one day. I mean,
you know,
the value of what you get relative to what you pay into a policy, it's one of the best values in the financial industry. I mean, I've looked at, you know, like I said, I've spent 20 years on the investment side And, you know, right in the middle of that 20 years, I began to concentrate on life insurance. So for the past 10 years, I've been focusing on life insurance, and it's gotten to the point to where, you know, because of some of the other things that I want to do community wise, you know, I've decided to build a pretty strong life insurance practice because I believe in it so much. And, you know, while yes, of course, I do believe in the investment space and investing for retirement, there's no guarantees within the investment world. There's, and by law, you can't say that there's any guarantees because there aren't. And so when you're talking about creating a financial plan, you got to have some guarantees. And with life insurance provides guarantees. As long as you pay that premium, they are contractually obligated to pay that benefit when you pass away. And so, you know, with any plan, you want to have some sort of guarantee. And that's why I'm not a huge fan of the buy term, invest the rest, because that plan has no guarantees. The investment space, the investment side of your plan has no guarantees. And then the life insurance side has no guarantees, because there's no guarantee that you're going to die within that term. So, you know, with my clients, I like to make sure that there's some level of guarantee that they can count on within their plan.
You know, I would tell people today, here's what you need to do. Go price the cost of a funeral.
Mm-hmm.
And today's cost of a funeral is about 10 grand or more. Can your family come up with 10 grand or more if something happened to you? I mean, think about that.
Think about it. And not only that, but, you know, if you do die at 60 years old, you know, and say, you know, in my case being 42, in 20 years, the cost of a funeral is going to be more than that.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Trust me. I know that for a fact.
Yeah. The cost of burying people is not going down. And so you have to take that into account with your calculations as well. And, you know, what kind of funeral do you want to have? Do you have people that are out of town? Do you need to replace your income? If you're married, you know, and you come up with this financial plan and you say, hey, you know, when I talk to couples, you know, they say, oh, I want to retire and I want to travel and I want the house to be paid off. I want our kids to go to college and I want these things. And then we, you know, just because of the way that I do business, when I talk to people, when we talk about investments and retirement planning first, then I come back around and say, well, should one of you pass away, do you still want that for your spouse? If the husband dies early, if you die in 10 years or 20 years, if you die before the age of, you know, retirement, do you still want those things for your family? And the answer is 99% of the time, it's yes. Yes, I still want my kids to go to college. Yes, I still want my spouse to not have to carry the mortgage payment by themselves. Yes, I want them to, you know, live out their life in a meaningful way, or in a way that is to a certain standard. You know, well, if that's the case, then we need to prepare, you know, for that event. You know, should you pass away early?
I mean, absolutely.
So those are things you got to consider.
Because when you think about it, it's like if you purchased a home, your home loan is normally, well, most Black people have a 30-year mortgage.
Yeah.
So that's 30 years. And you probably didn't get your home until you were 30 years old.
Exactly.
So.
Exactly. At least, you know, at least 30. So, yeah. So you got to protect yourself. At least for that whole 30 years, at least at minimum. And so, you know, and it's sad, you know, to be honest, it's sad when a spouse passes away and the other spouse has to sell the house and now they have to live in an apartment, you know, or they've got to live now in a condo because now they can't afford the house anymore. You want to make sure that all your, you know, debts are able to be accounted for. You want to make sure that your family, again, can live the life that they're living, even though you're not there financially, that you want to income replacement. You know, when I talk to clients, oftentimes when we talk about how much life insurance they should have, we go back to that conversation that you and I had about human life value. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we want to replace your human life value. And we want to cover all of your needs, you know, all your financial needs. You know, for me, I'm not married, but if I was married, you know, if I were to die at the age of 50 and, you know, I've got a wife and kids, I don't want them to have to worry about money after I die. So when we talk about how much life insurance you want to get, you know, you want to take all of those things into consideration, because if I'm just starting to, you know, really get into investing and I'm going to get my financial house in order and I'm 42 years old and I want to get on top of things. All right. Well, if you die in 10 years, chances are you're not going to have enough money in your investment accounts to take care of your family for the rest of their lives.
Oh yeah.
And so you want to have some life insurance to account for that. And that'll do that. Life insurance will do that.
And then when you think, like I say, even if you're not married and you don't have any kids and you purchase a life insurance policy and say you're the youngest of your siblings and everyone else has passed on, you can still leave your funds to a charity, any charity you want.
You can leave your funds to charity. You can leave your, you know, to your church, anything that you're passionate about. Life insurance is a tool. And like you said, yeah, even if you don't have kids and you're the youngest in your family, there might be other things that, you know, you want to take care of. Philanthropy is a big thing with life insurance. You know, a lot of wealthy clients that I've had in the past, you know, they'll say, you know, when I die, I want all my money to go to my church. Or I've seen situations where people say, well, I don't have a lot of money. I can't afford to tithe to my church, you know, 10% of my income every year, you know, but in my passing, I'd like to give them something. I want to give my church something, or this nonprofit something. And they say, well, you know, I'll settle up on the way out. You know, I'll give that 10% on the way out. So, you know, I've seen people do it that way.
That's pretty good. I set up on the way out. Well, the pastor holding on to the tab. Yep. These are the amount of years that you did not pay anything. Here you go.
Here you go.
Here's your bill.
Here's your bill. Here you go. I've seen that, you know, and that's fine. If that's how you want to do it, you know, that's the way that, you know, you can do it. And another key thing, you know, because I can go on talking about life insurance forever. Another key component of life insurance is that the death benefit is tax free. You don't pay any taxes on that. You get $1 million policy, you keel over, that beneficiary is getting $1 million. I've delivered, you know, policies for $400,000, $500,000 to families, and the wife, and in the cases that I'm talking about, it's generally been the men that have passed away.
I was going to come down that road about men die earlier.
Yeah, men generally didn't tend to die sooner than women, and then in my cases, you know, in my experience, that's what I've kind of seen too, is that the men have passed away, and then now I've got this check that I need to deliver to the spouse. And they are so thankful. They are so happy that, you know, that things were taken care of, that they don't have to worry about that. You know, and when you're talking about burials, you know, just the aspect of just taking care of the funeral, just the minimal amount of things, the bare minimum amount of things that needs to be done, which is to put that person in the ground. Not having to worry about that from a financial standpoint is a huge relief to everyone in the family. You know, well, you don't want to pass on that burden to other people, you know, in the family. You know, I know whenever I bought my life insurance policy, I continue to buy life insurance. I bought a policy when I was younger, and then I keep adding to it. I keep buying more policies. And I sleep very good at night knowing that you know, my daughter's going to be taken care of. She's not going to have to worry about money. Of course, I want my daughter to learn, you know, good work ethic and all sorts of kind of stuff. I've heard people say, I don't want to buy life insurance because I want my kids to, you know, work for their money, and that's fine. But I still want my daughter to have good work ethic, and I'll teach her that. But I also don't want to have her to depend on, again, what I consider to be a predatory financial system that we live in. I don't want my daughter to have to go to the bank and apply for a loan. She can go to the bank of daddy. If daddy's dead, daddy's left enough money to where she doesn't have to go to the bank
and get turned down
or be subjected to, you know, the bank saying, well, you know, oh, your credit's not good enough, you know, or, you know, or this or that. You know, she can just say, all right, my dad left this money for me and I can use this, you know, to get my house. And so, you know, when you're thinking long term, you know, you got to think about those kind of things. I want to shield my family from the, you know, this outside financial world as possible. I don't want them to have to go beg for money.
So that's what you mean about that generational wealth, you know. And I call it, you know, like the old money, you know,
that old money. That's how they get it. Yep. I mean, that's how people get old money. You know, it's through life insurance and through home ownership, and, you know, also through investing in things. But, you know, life insurance and home ownership within the Black community has been the primary means by which to transfer generational wealth, and not just in the Black community, but in just about every community. You know, not everybody invests. Not every family invests. But most families do have some sort of life insurance. Most of our Caucasian counterparts do have life insurance, and they do own their own home.
I'm going to put it like this. Most of my friends that I've known for years, most of my Caucasian friends, my white friends that I've known for years, their parents got, when they had their first born, the first gift was a life insurance policy.
Right. You know, and you saying that, you know, when I worked in the investment space, one of the things that turned me on to life insurance was that probably once a week, I would get a call from some 20 something year old about my age. I'm on the phone taking their call, and they would say, oh, well, we found some paperwork under granddad's, you know, under his mattress or in his closet or in his shoebox. Mm-hmm. And he had some life insurance policy, and I was the beneficiary. How do I invest it? So they're calling me as a 25-year-old, and they've just, you know, inherited, you know, $100,000, $200,000 life insurance policy, and they're asking me how to invest it. And that triggered within me a train of thought that said, you know, well, how are these young kids? How are these young people, you know, having all this money? How are these people 30 years old? And, you know, whenever I lived in Denver, you know, how are they living in these nice neighborhoods? And they're the same age as I am. And they, you know, make just as much money as I do or less. And it's because of planning that was done before them.
There you go.
You know, and as an interesting side note, I'll go over on time here, but as an interesting side note, being here in Tennessee, my mom, she had went down to Mississippi several months ago, and she went back to Indiana, and she gathered some of my grandfather's old paperwork and stuff. And, you know, he bought life insurance on his youngest child. He had life insurance on himself. And, wow, you know, so, it was funny. I'm looking at all these old documents from the 70s, and I'm seeing him making his premium payments and stuff. And I was like, and this is just recently. And I'm thinking to myself, granddad was smart. He knew about life insurance. And I was proud. I was like, my granddad, he knew what was up, you know, when it came to money. You know, he had to. He had 10 kids. And so.
Yep. There you go.
So he had to provide for them. And so he was pretty savvy, you know, with money, and he made sure to take care of business there. And so, you know, within the Black community, within our families, you know, we need to make sure that we take care of business, and we need to make sure that we cover all our bases, and that we, you know, that we have the proper, we're using the tools that are available to us. And you can buy, and here's another thing, you can buy life insurance on other people. If you have an insurable interest in family members, you know, it's going to sound weird, but you can. You know, you have grandparents, or you have your aunt, your uncle, whoever. You can set up a strategy that will create a family legacy. You know, I've got 10 aunts and uncles. Well, two of them have passed away. But, you know, you want to make sure that all that money passes down the way that it's supposed to. I want to make sure that all my cousins, all the people of my generation within that family, that all those aunts and uncles that I have life insurance, so that when they pass away, that their houses are paid off and that the kids can move into those houses if they want to, or use them as financial assets. They can rent them out or sell them or do whatever they're going to do with them. You want to make sure that there is an efficient transfer of assets from one generation to another.
Now that's a good plan. I mean, you know, I forgot about that. We didn't dive into that. And so we probably do need to dive into that on our next episode.
Yes. Part two.
Developing that generational wealth, buying insurance on those that you have interest in. That's a good one. So, my man Demetrius, on our closing, what do you like to leave with our guest today?
Well, I want people to, you know, begin having those conversations with their family members about life insurance. It's sometimes, you know, not a comfortable conversation, but it's one that needs to be had. And we talk about on this show having candid conversations, and you and I have candid conversations with your audience. But hopefully the audience, you know, will take these conversations and have conversations with their family and their loved ones, so that they can, you know, take care of what they need to take care of within their family. And so my advice, or my parting words, would be to, you know, break down some of these walls and break down some of these, you know, I'll call them generational curses of miscommunication and lack of communication. Break those down and start having these conversations about money and what we're going to do. You know, building wealth and having conversations about building wealth with your family and your partner, you'd be surprised, you know, how that can strengthen a relationship. And so I would definitely recommend that that people take this information, and if they have additional questions, you know, we've talked about this before, you know, please reach out to myself, if not myself, you know, your trusted advisor or person to, you know, say, hey, what do I need to do to get on track to get things going? So that's what I'll leave them with, is that, you know, just start thinking about these things and the ways in which we're starting to talk about them.
All right. I want to thank everyone for joining us today on HNC Let's Talk Podcast. And until next time, which will be Wednesday at 5 p.m. Mountain Time, part two with Demetrius Radin Johnson. And until then, everyone have a great week. And I want to thank you also, Demetrius, for joining us.
Thank you.
You're listening to the HNC Let's Talk Podcast, hosted by Dexter Brooks. Thanks for tuning in to HNC Let's Talk Podcast. We partner with subject matter experts to provide candid conversations on health and lifestyle. Here at HNC Let's Talk Podcast, mental, physical, spiritual, financial, and health are all connected. This episode of HNC Let's Talk Podcast is sponsored by HealthNet Co. Together, we make insurance simple.